Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my fantastic co-host and business partner, Al McDonald. Al, always good to see you.
And absolutely always good to be here, and always very exciting to talk to some really smart, talented people. And today's no exception.
Well, people might not know this, but part of our process is internally, we call it a chemistry call. You want to have a phone call with a person or jump on Teams or something to see if there's a fit. You can have a conversation, and every once in a while, there's dead air and you go, oh, nice to meet you, but there's just not going to be a podcast. Well, oh my gosh, this person joining us today, right from, I'm going to say 10 seconds into the conversation, the energy, it was electric. I knew right away we were going to have a great podcast with this person. So joining us today is Courtney Shelton. Courtney is a dynamic HR executive, author, and educator with over 15 years of experience transforming people strategies across the public, private, and nonprofit sectors. As Chief People Officer at Redstone Agency, she leads development, culture building, and organizational effectiveness initiatives, helping the agency thrive in the global event and association management space. Courtney is also the author of the HR Blueprint, a practical guide that empowers HR teams to align with purpose and drive meaningful change. She is also a respected speaker and educator, having taught at Sheridan and Mohawk colleges, and frequently presents to the HRPA. Such a big fan of the HRPA, by the way. Courtney, hello, Jody. Look forward to seeing you next time. And talks at events like integrating mission, vision, and values into HR functions. Courtney, welcome to the podcast. So excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, I'm so excited. What an intro. Wow. I have some imposter syndrome, so it's nice to hear that reverbed back to me. I'm like, you know what? That is pretty cool.
No kidding. Well, let's dive into it because we had such a good conversation the first time we connected, and I've gotten to know you a little bit through your bio as well. You've led people strategies across education, public service, now the event sector. Can you talk to us about maybe one core HR philosophy that's remained constant through all those transitions and as you continue to grow in your career?
Yeah, I think the first one that comes to my mind is honestly, it's like a bit of common sense and simplicity. Like, I do think we have the tendency to overcomplicate things in the HR profession and more broadly, like in the corporate world, we tend to overcomplicate things. We tend to wrap a lot of stuff up in like jargon and circle backs and doing all of that kind of stuff. I really do try every single place that I go to keep it as simple as possible and to really go down to like whatever the root is that we're actually trying to solve. And that's been easier at different places than it has at other places. For anybody that spent some time in academia or in government, we tend not to keep things simple. We tend to make things the most complicated version that they should be. Whereas in a startup like where I'm at right now, you have the tendency to be able to keep things a little bit more agile, a little bit more simple, sort of like be outcome focused and blow past all the noise. So I think that that's probably the biggest philosophy that I bring with me to everything. You'll see me in a meeting and I'll go, what's the simplest way to do this? Are we overcomplicating this? Can I unpack this and just go, what's the net outcome that we need and pull apart the rest of the noise that sort of gets involved in it?
Why do we complicate things? Why do we do that? Like, is that just a culture thing? Like, do you see that more in one industry versus another, or government versus non-government? Like, why do we do that?
I don't know. I did actually at one point think it was just an HR thing. And I know we just finished having a lovely conversation around how sometimes I feel like I'm an outlier from my peers in the HR space in that I actually am not a big fan of rules. I'm not a super big fan of policy. I know it has to exist to get a job done, and I understand. But I tend to sort of be a little bit outside the box in terms of how we can get something done. So I used to think that it was just HR people, but then I think it's also finance people, like a big overcomplication of something instead of just focusing on whatever the net outcome you need to have happen. I don't know if it's like an attempt at demonstrating a specific skill set where it's sort of like we have to show our value by getting that seat at the table by not intentionally overcomplicating it by saying like, as Courtney, I'm the only one who could possibly do this for you. So I'm going to overcomplicate it slightly so that it sits with me only. So I did used to think it was only HR people, but I'm growing apart from that idea because I think, and I don't know the why, I'm not really sure. I don't know why we do this. And I don't think it's just public sector. Definitely it happens in startups for sure. But I did see it a lot more in academia and the public sector where there was so much red tape. There was so much to go around to have something very simple happen, which is why it's not likely that from a career trajectory for me that you'll see me back at a city or you'll see me back at academia because I really love to move quickly. And that's just not something that happens in those types of organizations.
I find especially when emotion is involved, we want to complicate things. We want to, and I don't think this is on a conscious level, a subconscious level with a lot of people. You want to make it complicated because you want to hold on to that emotion rather than find the solution, deal with the problem and move on, right? You had talked about, maybe you didn't, what was the word you used, Courtney? An outlier in your space, in the HR space. We've met a few people through the podcast now who don't come from these traditional backgrounds into HR. And for them, it's been a real superpower. Has that been the case for you as well?
I think so, because I do commonly get told by either CEOs or whoever I'm reporting into, I do commonly get told you're nothing like the other HR people. And most of the time, it's a compliment. I think occasionally it's not so much a compliment in that I really do try to do things really differently. I try to think outside the box for like everything that I'm doing. I focus almost never on a policy or a process. And I focus on whatever the net outcome that we have to have happen. And I see the rest as falling into place once I figure out what we ultimately want to have done. And I do think that that's been a big piece of my success in my career is that I don't think the exact same. I definitely wasn't drawn to human resources. If you knew me as a person personally, I can't believe how many people are like, wait, you're in human resources because I do all the things that you think an HR person wouldn't do. Like I'm not super like buttoned up. I don't really like rules. I break a lot of rules just in life. I do a lot of stuff that you would think that's what an HR person would do. Not really bad stuff. I just mean that I am an outside the box sort of thinker. I want to get something done and I'll do anything to sort of have that something done. I don't tend to follow a closed set. And I think it's been a big piece of the success of the places that I've worked for because I find it very easy for me to partner. Now I'm in the C-suite, but before I was in the C-suite, I found it really easy to actually partner with C-suite members and executives and stuff because they gravitated to me because I had like a no-nonsense sort of common sense approach to everything. So I was able to get a lot done because I built trust with them because they liked my approach to things versus some of my colleagues who are really linear with their thinking. And then they're like, I don't know why the CFO won't work with me on this. I'm like, I don't think you're taking like a common sense sort of approach to it. So they're probably just seeing you as a barrier instead of a problem solver.
So we've established that Courtney does not like policy. She doesn't like processes.
Or rules.
Yeah, or rules. Or maybe I shouldn't say don't like, but is more focused on the outcome and the end result. So maybe you can talk about something that's been really impactful. Like where has this approach really benefited you? Can you talk about a big success that you've maybe had doing this?
Yeah, there are so many to talk about. I think the one that jumps out at me the most is really the work that I've done across quite a few different organizations, like funnily enough, from a policy perspective. The lens that I bring to policy and the lens that I bring to changing the way that we think about policies, I think has been really net impactful to the people that are working at the organizations I work for, because I come in and I say, send me your 50-page Word doc that has all your vacation rules and all of your dress code rules. And I basically level it to the ground and I start all over. And that start all over tends to be like, how can I phrase this in one or two sentences? people are smart, people are reasonable. Let's not build a whole thing for the outlier person who's going to do the most deranged thing possible. Let's just focus on what most people are going to perceive from this document. And it seems like it's like, okay, well, that's the most impactful thing you can think of is like a policy. But actually, like the net impact is that people feel like we don't think they're stupid. And I think a lot of those policies and a lot of those documents, they talk to people you hired like they're stupid and you hired them. So if they're stupid, you know, like,
what's that say about us?
Yeah, then what are we? We have to talk to people like they're normal human beings who can read something and discern what a normal, reasonable person would do with that policy. So I think actually that sort of approach has been very impactful net, like down at the staff level, if that makes sense.
It does. It makes total sense. And I mean, at the end of the day, what I think I heard you say there pretty clearly was, hey, let's treat people like they're adults, which they are. And there's a reason that you brought them on board. So why not just treat them like that?
100%. And when we talk, like I do find when I work collaboratively with, let's say, leaders who have teams reporting into them, or even HR people, I've had large HR teams reporting into me before, where I say to them, like, let's just talk to them in the most like common sense way that you would apply this. And it's just that doesn't tend to be something that's natural to a lot of leaders or even a lot of HR people. They tend to really gravitate to that, like almost like a talk down type of style of like the policy is you have to turn left and then you have to turn right. And the net impact to the person is, do you think I'm stupid? And like that actually has a big takeaway for a person that wants to believe that you hired them for all the right reasons.
Yeah, it is like it's what you just described is really a little bit of an older style of management, right? Where the rules are in place. Somebody made the rules. We just need people to follow them as opposed to a little bit more of a collaborative approach where, like you say, people are smart. People can figure things out. People can figure out how to do things in the best way to do their job.
Yeah. But
there's got to be a little bit of trust involved there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, trust is key because, I mean, we're not a huge company. We've been around for 20 years, but we're not a massive company. And I can't imagine, Courtney, bringing someone in where I would have to baby them and watch everything and refer to the policy. I mean, you're an adult. You know it's expected of you, right? And there's a lot of trust. And I found over the last few years, because we've been growing the team as well, when I empower people, when I give them trust, you might need to help on coaching once in a while, but they step up to that challenge or that responsibility. So I think that's the way to do it. I'm chomping at the bit here, though, to talk about the HR blueprint, because I've never written a book. So I'm very curious. So talking to you about that. So number one, like, where did that come from? Because I mean, I'm not going to out you for your age, but you're definitely younger than me. Like, how do you already have a book out? Like, that's amazing.
You know what? I get asked this a lot on podcasts and stuff, and I don't even know if it's quite visible how uncomfortable praise and stuff like that makes me. I really have to work on it. I definitely need counseling or something. It's something deeper for sure. But in all seriousness, it's self-published. So it really did come about because this system that I was developing at the time, I was working really closely reporting into the CEO of the public library system, and I was building all of these systems that were being utilized way more broadly. And then I was coaching and training on this system that I had built in the colleges I was teaching at and stuff. And at one point, our CEO was like, you have to do something about claiming this as intellectual property at some point. Like, you have to do something to solidify this as intellectual property. Of course, she's a librarian and the CEO of the library, so she's brilliant as it relates to intellectual property and what that would look like. And so that was really the evolution of the book. And it really was, in the first intro of the book, it really says, like, it's meant to be a toolkit. There was many times that I would sit down with somebody and I would try to help coach them into building the right kind of department. And once I took them through the system, like 10 out of 10, every manager I worked with was like, this makes so much sense, actually. Like, why didn't I just think of this before? So then when I wrote the book, I really thought about people in HR, but otherwise, like in any department or any sector or anything, opening up the book and just being able to build something meaningful in a way that is structured. I actually think what I'll end up doing with the book is converting it to like a PDF or something that somebody could just download, because it really is more important to me that I never built it for sales. I never built it to like, I knew I was never going to be a New York Times bestselling author or anything with it. I always just built it because I wanted to solidify it as mine, but I wanted to help people build something. So I think anybody that is looking for, so first and foremost, like, don't buy it because I'm probably going to convert it to a PDF. But so just hold tight on that. You can just stay tuned on my LinkedIn because I think that's what I'm going to do with it. But anybody that's just looking to understand a little bit more about how you could possibly go about building a department and structuring a department and making strategic goals for a department. It really is a really big gap kind of everywhere. Like if you were to meet with an IT manager and say like, what's the dream structure of your department? What should it look like? What are the goals? How can you integrate your department with the goals? A lot of people say, I have no idea where I would start with that. So the book, it tries to give them a place to start.
So Courtney, can you talk maybe a little more though about HR being a whole strategic partner? Because again, I'll go back to old school thinking. If you got called down to the HR department,
You're in trouble now.
This confrontational type of meeting. Yeah, exactly. It certainly wasn't a partnership.
Mm-mm.
It was a little bit more adversarial, let's just say. So talk about how, in your mind, you want to work towards, or how people can work towards making more of a collaborative approach as opposed to an adversarial one.
Yeah, I think it really, that one is so multi-pronged. Like first and foremost, I feel like it falls onto the more senior HR people, like out in the broader community, of shifting through influence how we should perceive HR and then mentoring the people below us to live in that space in HR. Like, I think it kind of starts there, which is what my big draw for me was with teaching. And my big draw for me with mentorship is like, it doesn't have to be this way. People shouldn't see your name in panic. I think it's also I know there's a whole other component of like how to make us strategic, but if I just am answering the question related to like, how do we make us less scary? How do we make us more collaborative? I think it's all in the small. It's things even like if I message somebody and I say, hey, can we have a quick chat? I'll put in brackets, good thing. Like, I'm on my way to see you. And then like a smiley face and like the dancing emoji, so that it seems so small. But when I coach the teams that report into me, I say, here's the things we never do. We never book a meeting with somebody with no context, no nothing. And it's booked for the next morning. It doesn't matter to me what you're talking about, whether it's discipline or not. Nobody gets anything without context. When you have to go chat with somebody, start out with recognizing the position of power that we're inherently in being in human resources and how they might not start out like with a certain level of comfort with you. And it's on you to create that comfort for them, not the other way around. I will meet with my teams and I'll say, I hold you personally accountable for how they feel in that meeting, because you have the power to make them feel differently in that meeting. So I think it's in the everyday. It falls on us as senior leaders in HR to have that in the community, to help mentor that, to put out thought leadership that really tries to solidify us as partners in the organization. Everybody knows that one of our key goals, obviously, is the business has to thrive. It has to meet its strategy. There's no doubt about that. Like, there's lots of people sometimes say like, HR isn't for you, it's for the company. Okay, but what's good for the company tends to be what's also good for you. Like, if we're thriving and we're successful and we're hiring properly and we're promoting the right people, that might not be you, but it's for the greater good of the company most of the time. There's always outliers to every single role and person, obviously. But I think that's really where we start.
Courtney, you started to go down that path and then you said, I'm going to answer this specific question, but you touched on it. HR is a strategic partner to the CEO, the leadership. Can you maybe talk about that? Because I think that's important. And that's one thing I've said many times on the podcast. If I could go back in time, I'd get HR involved sooner. The people that we work with, they are a strategic partner. They're involved in most decisions, almost all decisions that we're making as a company. So can you talk about the importance of that and what you see happening in your space now?
Yeah, I think it's so important that we have, I know this is so overused, but that we have a seat at the table, that HR has a seat at the table, because we have a line of sight that no one else in the organization could possibly have. And we have a skill set that no one else in the organization could explicitly have, which is that we can see at 30,000 feet what it looks like from the people perspective. We can anticipate hiring challenges. We can anticipate impacts of promotions. We can anticipate, like, when trained properly. I definitely a big piece of my role. I always say I tend to be like, not like HR as in paperwork HR, I tend to be like org design type of HR. And so it's been a really big piece of my career for a long time, data modeling, staff ratio modeling. And I think that in order for HR people of the future to have that seat, they have to also show their value in that seat. So they have to arrive to meetings saying, hey, I see where we're going with this department, but can I suggest that maybe like a 3-to-1 manager, whatever managerial ratio would work stronger in this model, or even just advocating for what they think would make sense. I think we tend to, when we think of a seat at the table, it's commonly been phrased as like, HR needs a seat at the table so that we can advocate for employee well-being. That's true. Of course it is. That's true. But if we want that real seat at the table, it's like, how can the company thrive? How can the company make money? That's like the seat. And then once we have the seat, we can bake in all the other parts. Like once I have that seat at the table, then I'm saying, now let's think about employee well-being and let's think about this, but I got to get the seat first. Now I have the seat and I've had it for a while. But when I was younger, I used to have to really rally for me to have that voice. And then once I had it, I had their ear forever. So I was able to say, like, I know I helped you data model out what that restructure would look like. Now, will you listen to me about this new benefit program I'm thinking about rolling out? And they trusted me already, so I could demonstrate the value of it.
Courtney, do you think there's an essential skill or mindset that HR professionals should really be working on and making sure that they have as the workforce evolves and the workplace evolves? Is there something that you would point to that would be essential for someone in your role?
Yeah, I thought about this one a lot because I think that when I'm looking to recruit somebody that's reporting up into me or I'm looking to partner with somebody, the very first thing that jumps out at me is like discernment. And the ability to make strong judgment calls and the ability to see what is very much gray. I think there's a lot of black and white thinkers in the HR space, and discernment and critical thinking are things that can be taught. They're things that can be learned, but you have to be mentored properly into them. Like there's an inherent skill, of course, like some of us are just different types of thinkers for sure. But even if I think about me and my background, I've been coached through CEOs how to think differently, how to think about where that gray space is. So I think if I'm thinking about somebody from a junior perspective, having really strong judgment that is based on an ability to weigh out like two logical options and figure something in the middle. Like, I think that that's not only the key skill, it's like, it's a really big missing skill. A lot of people just sit in these two pathways and there's so much in the middle. And anytime I'm recruiting, anytime I'm looking to work for a CEO or I'm looking to partner with somebody, the very first thing I'm looking for is, can you sit in this gray space? Do you understand that things aren't black and white? And if I start to get the sense of like black and white thinking or like that there isn't something in the middle, I'm like, I'm out, because I can work with anybody as long as they can see that there's something in the middle and I can help like flourish that. But that's really what I think the key piece is.
So I love your answer because I am a big believer as I've, you know, gotten older, the world is not black and white. It's thousands of shades of gray. So I think that's great advice. I'm going to put you on the spot though.
That's okay.
You said, you told me the what, how does someone get there?
Yeah.
Because that's the tough part.
I knew you were going to ask this. I had a feeling in my stomach that you were going to ask this.
Told you I was going to put you on the hot seat.
That's okay. I honestly do think that because if I even think about me, I've always been a critical thinker. I've always kind of been like this since I was really young. But even then, I think about myself 5, 6, 7 years ago, and I was much more of a black and white thinker. I became not a black and white thinker by seeking out knowledge and by partnering with mentors that helped me to seek it out, partnering with people and working, for example, like seeking out mentors that challenged my thinking. That's how you build discernment, is somebody challenging your thinking, getting outside the box, getting in the right groups where your ideas are challenged and where you can see other concepts is like the first piece. And I know for me, a big piece of my career, like I'm a completely different person since working at the library, because the library fundamental pillar is intellectual freedom. And I don't think I was really somebody that even understood that concept, or I was much more of a black and white thinker where I was like, this is either right or it's wrong. And our CEO was like, is it? And I was like, I don't know, is it? And it really caused me to pause and to think. So to answer directly your question, I think if somebody's looking to build that discernment, to remove some of that black and white thinking, you have to seek it out. You have to seek it out through mentorship. And then for our teams or the people that we're working with, any of my direct reports will say, I will commonly be in a meeting with them and go, is it? Are you sure? How do you know?
And then just shut up.
Yeah.
Wait for them to answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just wait and just let them sit in that for a second. And often they'll go, you know, I don't know. And I'm like, okay. So then they take that away and they go and build and they come back to me and they go, you know what? I thought about it. I'm not sure that I'm right. And sometimes they say, I'm not sure you're right either. But now discernment has come about. Now, critical thinking has come about, and I think that's how we build it with people that are reporting into us. And then if somebody is more junior in their career or even not, because of course you meet people who are senior in their career who don't have discernment or have black and white thinking. But if you are somebody that is wanting to sort of expand that, you got to seek that out through mentorship, through knowledge, through information, challenging your own thoughts.
Yeah, I love that. And I think a little bit of just self-reflection sometimes too on, you know, why do I believe what I believe?
Yeah. And where did that come from? And why do I think this is so black and white? And why do I think that, is this all layered in my own personal experience only? And when you start to unpack that, like in my mind, like the world is your oyster, because now it's almost like I was seeing in gray and now I see in color. Like I really do see the world completely differently, in particular because of my experience actually at the library. Like I didn't think I was a black and white thinker before, but I realized I definitely was, or like much more in that sort of realm.
I love the library.
The library is amazing.
When I go to the library, it's just this great feeling. I don't know what it is.
You know, every time you reference the library, I'm thinking of that Seinfeld episode with Bookman. Like, what a perfect name for a, it was the library police. Courtney, if you've never seen that episode.
I haven't.
Especially with working in the library, you have to go watch.
I will.
Just go back on a Netflix, watch that episode. It's one of the funniest episodes ever. Courtney, I want to share a hack. And Al knows because I've used it on him before and I've heard him use it. You ever ask someone, you know, you ask them what the issue is or how you can figure this out and what you can do to resolve the situation. Their default answer is, I don't know. Almost like that's what they're coming to you for. So anytime someone says, I don't know to me, I say, I know you don't know. But if you did know, what would you say? And they will always give you an answer.
I love that.
Every single time, without fail. So try it. Because I did it on Al one time and he gave me, I don't know, which is rare for Al that he never gives me. But he did one time and I said, I know you don't know, but if you did. And then he gave me an answer. And then he realized immediately what I had just done. And he's like, okay, I'm using that too. And I've seen Al use it and get the same response.
I've used it back on Robin too, by the way.
He has. Of course he has.
Yeah, for the record.
Absolutely. It is very effective though. I do love it.
I really do love that. I could see that working for sure. I've tended to sort of lean into like when, let's say, a team member or even a colleague says, I have no idea where to start or I don't know. My next step is sort of like, well, let's do a brainstorm. Like let's spaghetti at the wall, every possible scenario and then try to get them closer to something. I love that. I'm going to try that.
You got
to
try it.
I'm going to.
Where I want to go next, because I'm sure you've experienced this. So every once in a while, I don't carry business cards anymore, but it's on my LinkedIn and someone will say, wow, you have so many designations. You must be so smart. And my answer is, no, I just had no life for a couple of years because all I did was work and study, right? And I kind of take it for granted now. And I'm not sure what your experience is, but you've got, I'm looking at your card, like your CHRL, your PROSCI, I can't even say that, PROSCI, your Lean Six Sigma.
That sounds interesting.
I mean, to me, I'm always, I don't know if the word's impressed, but I realize the commitment to education that those people have done to get those designations. Like there's a couple, like Al has one that's very, very hard to get. I have one that's the highest one I can get in my industry. So I do recognize that. But just talking about your own journey, how important has that been, that continuous learning for your own, you know, that leadership journey that you're on? Because other people are looking up to you, obviously, as well as partnerships that you have within the organization. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing actually that jumped out at me was thinking about how I feel like every year that I get older and every more certification that I get or education that I get, I realize how much I don't know. And when I was younger, I'm still young now, like don't get me wrong, but when I was younger and very entry level in my career, I literally thought I was so smart. I thought nobody could ever outsmart me. And I was so brilliant and I was the smartest person in the room in every single room. And now every year that I get older, I realize how far I really am from that and how much more knowledge there is in the world to receive. So when I think about certifications, yes, they sort of solidify that you did it, but the seeking of knowledge and the seeking of learning is so deeply, deeply important to me. And the certifications tend to be like the outcome of those, or yeah, I'm able to put that on my LinkedIn. Great. But I think in my mind, as a leader, whether it's certifications or not, when you stop learning and seeking out new knowledge, you might as well give up. Because especially when I think about us in like the HR world, there's so many HR people right now that are still like 10, 15 years behind. And AI is already like, it's not even at our doorstep. It's already like in the house. And they're still at like typing up we're still in Word documents. We're still doing all of our interviews with like a pen and a paper. There's like a broad spectrum of where we're at. And I constantly seek out new information. Like just 3 weeks ago, I was at like an AI workshop, like an AI HR workshop, just trying to understand like how that will integrate in our industry. Because if I'm not ahead of it, if I'm not at least meeting it at the door, I'm already really far behind. And learning is really important to me. It's the only way in my mind that I can be an accountable leader. If I'm still 10, 15 years behind, if I'm still where I was at when I was 20, then what good am I to anybody? What good am I to the people who report into me? What good am I to my CEO or anybody that I report into? So certification or not, the seeking of knowledge has always been so, so important to me.
Isn't it funny when you're young and you think you do know everything and your parents don't know anything? Yeah. I remember being so mad at my dad because this and that. And then I remember as an adult having conversations with him saying, hey, you know, you were right about that. And he goes, yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's just a rite of passage, I think.
Yeah, it is, right? It's so funny that, you know, eventually you realize that, okay, I don't know everything. And what I would say to you, Courtney, is here's the cool thing, because you and I are aligned on a lot of areas. I already know this. But that continuous hunger for knowledge and learning and growing and becoming better and a better person and a better leader and all those things, that doesn't stop. Because that journey that I started almost 30 years ago now, 29 years in the business, and then excitement is still here today. Mm-hmm. Like I'm still, like there's so, you know, my industry is not that big and not that complicated, but there's still so much to learn. And it seems to be ramping up. And I say this to Al, you know, we've been business partners with Al and Joe for 20 years. And I'm just as excited, if not more excited, about the opportunities ahead of us, right? I just see so much opportunity. So it's really refreshing for me to hear someone like yourself on your journey a little bit earlier than I am. You have that thirst for knowledge and growing and learning and just making that contribution. So I think the energy that you're putting out here today, oh my gosh, it's so infectious in such a good way.
Aw, well, that's really sweet.
We'll put that in brackets and in a good way. In a good way.
Yeah, a good thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
Well, that's really sweet.
Well, we've arrived at my favorite part of the podcast, and that is Al's signature question. And Al doesn't take credit for the question because someone else obviously came up with it, but I will give him credit because he's the one who found it and said, hey, this would be a great thing that we could bring to the podcast. And honestly, every answer is so unique in their own way. And if you're up for it, we'd love to throw it at you too.
Yes, absolutely. I can't wait.
And Courtney, I'm going to frame this from a professional point of view, but if you want to turn it around and answer from a personal point of view, something that's going on personally in your life, feel free to. So here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So through your work in building HR frameworks and mentoring future young professionals, writing the HR blueprint, you've already done a lot. You've already clearly invested in long-term people development. But what other proverbial trees are you planting? And what do you hope will be the effect someday on leaving the legacy behind you?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, like I'm a parent. So when I think about my daughter and I think about the trees that I plant there with her, like I could go on a 45-minute rant, I think, about that one. But when I think professionally, I know the three of us were chatting about like vision boards, and I was sharing that I have a vision board. I have lifetime goals, and then I have 1-year goals, 3-year goals, 5-year goals. And when I think about my lifetime goals, it's written down on my board that some of my lifetime goals, especially for women, to build other women's careers, like to have a really big hand in somebody else's career. So even if I think about the last, let's say, 3 positions that I've been in or that I've left, my direct report has succeeded me in the last 3 positions that I was in. So I coached them and I brought them to take over my role. And I think about what they then do with their careers. And I think about then when they mentor somebody else, and if they're mentoring somebody else with the lens of like, not defensiveness, not worried that the other person below you is going to be smarter than you, stronger than you, but actually leaning into that and going, maybe you are smarter than me. Maybe you are stronger than me. How about you take over my role when I go? And how about you flourish and you grow? And when I think about the trees that I'm planting, like I hope that as I leave the people that are overtaking these roles that I was once in, I hope that the piece that I leave is like just the ability to think a little bit differently, to challenge our thinking, and to go at everything with a lens of growing the people below them. Like the quote that always comes to my mind is the sign of a successful what is it? It's like the signal to successful leader is a leader that builds other leaders or something like that. It's like, that's when you know that you've really made it. When you can like put your hand down and bring somebody else to the same level and maybe they do the same below them. So that's the tree that I think I'm planting would be that.
Well, what a great answer. And the fact that you've achieved as much already and you've still got presumably a pretty long runway ahead of you, I think that you're going to be having an impact on a lot of other people during that time as well. So thanks for that.
Yeah. And Courtney, that resonates with me, what you said. You want those people who are under you and you train and grow and see them flourish and do great things. So about just over a year ago, an account executive I had brought on through our company's name is Aria Benefits. And that's key to what I'm going to tell you. But he had come to me on a Friday and he was actually quite emotional. And the carrier had given him a great opportunity. And he's got two young kids. And I said to him, I said, Chris, like, this is a great opportunity. Like, I can't hold you back. Like, do not feel bad. Go. And I was so proud in the moment because it was an account executive role at a carrier. And he said, well, I told him I wouldn't take the job unless I could be your rep over at the company so I get to deal with you still. And it's just turned into such a wonderful relationship. He goes to bat for us. New leads come into us. It's been so great. So now I refer to anyone like that in his situation, instead of an ex-employee, he's Aria alumni.
Yeah, I love that.
He's alumni now, right? And it's just, you never know. Those people are going on and doing great things and we're continuing to grow the company. Who knows?
Oh, for sure.
That person might come back with additional skill sets that he might not have gotten otherwise exploring that opportunity. So your answer is going to resonate with a lot of people. I am so thankful that we connected and we got to have this conversation. I know there are future conversations and hopefully we get to break bread together at some point as well. For listeners who want to find out more about what you're doing, more about your company, what's the best way to reach out?
Just connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just Courtney-Shelton.
All right, perfect. Well, that does it today. If that didn't give you a huge boost of energy, well, you should just, you know, turn this off and go home because I'm going into Friday with just feeling amazing because this was such a great conversation. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed it. If you want to contact Al or I, just reach out on LinkedIn or give us a call. And remember, success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.